On this episode of the Star Trek Universe podcast, we are talking about the Star Trek Discovery Season 4 New York Comic-Con trailer right after these words from our mystery sponsors.
Welcome to the Star Trek Universe Podcast, the podcast where you get to listen in on the continuing Star Trek conversation that two lifelong friends have been having since they were 6 years old. My name's Matthew Carroll.
And I am David C. Robertson.
How you doing, Dave?
Man, it has been a really cool day. Like, a really cool couple of days. Just because of the Star Trek content. Like, and, you know, Ghostbusters is getting, the new Ghostbusters Afterlife movie is getting rave reviews. And, I'm very excited about that. I've been waiting on that movie forever.
Yeah, I've been wanting a sequel to the original Ghostbusters for a real, real long time.
Mm-hmm.
I've been saying it like, you know, I'd love to see, and I hope we can get more than just Dan Aykroyd back.
Oh, I think everybody's coming back except for, of course, Harold.
Okay. See, I didn't even know.
Yeah.
I haven't kept up with the news on it at all because I guess mm-hmm. I'm like not really trying to. I just know in the trailer it's pretty clearly.
Well, I will say this, and
Dan Aykroyd.
I've heard that everyone's coming back. We saw Janine in the last trailer, I believe.
Yeah, that's right.
But the action figures started coming out.
Oh.
And not only do they have all the kids, they have an old Bill Murray, an old Ray, and an old Winston. So
I gotta say, that's annoying as shit.
Why?
I don't really like to be spoiled by toys. Oh. Because it feels like the most unintentional spoiler. Like if it's in a trailer, you know, even like it seems like they really let things slip in toys that they don't mean to let slip. You know what
I mean? Well, I mean, I'm pretty sure that it was announced before, but at the same time, you know, even if it wasn't, the thing about the toys is you take something like, you know, back in 2016 before Batman v Superman came out, there was a 2-pack that came out in toys that was Superman versus Lex Luthor in battle armor or whatever.
Right.
That shit didn't happen. There was no battle armor.
Well, you even take like trailers with Marvel. You look at Infinity War. Uh-huh. There's that like scene with Hulk running with the crew through Wakanda. And mm-hmm. it was like really exciting. Like, ooh, Hulk's in Wakanda. What's that all about? And Hulk never came out of Banner during that series section. It just like they completely just put him in there to throw us all off.
Yeah. So, you know.
I'm a proponent of. I love that kind of stuff. I don't mind being misdirected. I just don't like, because when it's in a toy, it's rarely wrong. Like, normally it's a thing mm-hmm. in the movie. But maybe not. Who knows?
I mean, I follow toys enough to know that it's at least, you know, it's about 50-50. Like,
okay. I just feel like a lot of times a toy, like you'll find a Lego set and it'll be named like a takedown of Ultron or some shit like that. And it's like, come on.
Not to get too in the weeds here, but if Ghostbusters Afterlife is successful enough, I hope it means that we're going to follow through on Aykroyd's plan from a few years ago where we'll have a few, like a new Ghostbusters movie every couple of years or every year. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be introducing a multiverse concept.
You know, I'm down with multiverse.
Absolutely. So that's what I'm hoping for. But really, I want to see this movie and I'm excited about it. But yeah, we can talk about Star Trek.
Yeah, now. Let's talk about Star Trek.
That's what we're supposed to be doing.
What this podcast is. So the new Star Trek Discovery Season 4 trailer dropped today.
Yes. And I am mostly ecstatic about it.
Yeah. What is hyping you up?
What is hyping me up is one where we've got this part Cardassian woman. She clearly looks like she's at least some part Cardassian.
Oh, okay. I see that with those ridges.
Yeah, she's got the ridges. Brows. She's got the spoon head. we've got this Ferengi man who may or may not be Ferengi. I'm just excited to see, you know, some semblance of that race in the future here. I saw a bunch of different species I recognized. I didn't know the name of. I saw an Orion woman. I saw a Lurian. That's a Morn, you know.
That's a morn, you know?
You know, that's a morn. I know a lot of, I have talked to a lot of Star Trek fans who are just like, oh yeah, I wonder, I want to know more about the morns.
Oh
like,
yeah, no.
You mean the Lurians?
I wouldn't have called them a morn, but I probably wouldn't have been able to come up with what he was off the top of my head.
Yeah.
But I just thought it was a funny phrase. Like, that's a morn, you know?
Yeah. So moving past, you know, referential stuff,
right.
I really like this idea. It feels like there's a real, going to be a real storyline, a real through line of Michael learning how to be a captain, learning how to be a leader. Mm-hmm. I really like the Cardassian woman telling her leadership is a balancing act. Your acts of bravery are huge swings of the pendulum. And there's a very fine line between a pendulum and a wrecking ball. I love that.
That's
I
so
loved
good.
That line.
So good. And it's really like a indictment of all of the different captains in Star Trek. Like, that's a very pointed thing that when we have these conversations about who is the best captain, one of the biggest things is like, yeah, everyone loves Kirk, but he's the wrecking ball, like, for sure.
Yes.
Then you've got, like, I don't know, like, Picard is so subdued that is he causing the swings he needs to or not? You know, he's almost, sometimes he's too kowtowing to the brass, maybe. By the end of the episode, he's normally not, but, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That balance is something that every captain needs to learn to find their own balance there.
And I don't think Picard ever really found it. He maybe found it somewhere in season 3 or 4 of Next Generation, but then by the movies, he's just running around in a wife beater shooting things. So,
oh, for sure. Well, you know, part of that is the second TNG movie is called Insurrection. So it's like,
right.
Or third.
Well,
third
kind of the third. But yeah. So it is sort of like, we're defying Starfleet's orders in First Contact. And then by Insurrection is like, I'm quitting Starfleet. Insurrection.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I do like this idea of the balancing act of leadership, being a through line. And then to juxtapose it pretty much with in the trailer with, we're just going to totally ignore that warning, aren't we? Like, I really loved that. Like, it kills me that so many, like, classic TOS people, like, hate Michael Burnham so much because she's just a Lady Kirk in a lot of ways. Like, she just does the shit she wants to do that she feels like is right. And that's one of the things I love about her. So,
yeah.
And of course, I enjoy seeing Tig Notaro back. It was a good life, you know. I don't know why, but it really amped me up that it looked like they had swords and it looked like they were on Kronos. I don't know if that was the planet they were on, but that's what it looked like to me.
Interesting.
I don't know. I might be wrong.
Well, you bring up something cool from the trailer. I liked a lot. I loved the, you know, whatever this is, we're going to have to face it together. And then you have this sort of council, and it was a bunch of, they had an Orion representative there. They had a Vulcan representative. They had human representatives. And if you're mentioning they're on Kronos, I didn't catch that. But if that's where they were, like, maybe they're going to reach out to the Klingons to bring them into the fold.
Which I might be wrong.
No, No, I'm just throwing it out there. If you're right, like that, maybe that ties into like they really need the galaxy to come together.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I love that as a theme for Star Trek. I like this whole super sort of post-apocalyptic future where everything's been torn apart and they have to rebuild it. It's exciting to me. I really hope we get more of the guy who's like the last Starfleet officer in the outpost or whatever, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, I want him more of that dude. I love that guy.
Me too.
Now, one thing I'm not crazy about is we've got another anomaly that's threatening the galaxy that is a mystery.
Same. It's like it's like the Burnham that cried apocalypse or something. I don't know. Like every season, the galaxy is such disarray that like all life is going to be wiped out by this machine or this time travel device or this whatever. Like all of this war, like, the mycelium network is breaking down and going to destroy all life again in the same season. Like, it's just like, oh, the Federation is kaput if we don't do this thing. And it's like, I just need, you know, those stakes just mean nothing if you do them every season.
Right.
And if the entire season is, it's almost like if you were doing smaller stories that led into that, you could, you can do that once a season, but it's like if your entire season is predicated on this thing being a huge threat, it just starts to feel like bad, just bad writing, kind of. Like there's a sort of push and pull that you need with stakes. You need stakes to have.
Yeah.
And you need them to get smaller and bigger and smaller and bigger. So the big ones feel big, and the smaller moments is where you have, you use them to build character, and you use them to be like, man, those small moments are fun. I want my happy crew to go back to their small moments, you know?
Yeah.
So the big moments, actually, you're scared of losing something important to you. I think about that a lot with Joss Whedon, I think, is particularly good at that, where the smaller episodes of Buffy or Firefly or whatever are such beautiful, happy moments where I feel like I'm hanging out with these crew members or Scoobies or whatever that are my friends, that when they're actually in danger, I'm actually scared I'm going to lose one of my friends, you know?
Right.
And this show has not done that. Like, to the most part, like there are a few characters I feel that way about. For the most part, it all feels like they're just always on the front lines of a, you know, universe ending a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's just too, my, like, lizard brain can't sustain the stress of that, so it just turns off.
Yeah, I'm generally much more a fan of, you know, character stakes more than anything.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
yeah. I loved Deep Space Nine, but they did a lot of character stakes, and these were characters that they let us get to know. And I feel like, Discovery, there are certain characters we still don't know a lot about. But I'm so much more interested in character stakes than I am, like, big galaxy ending things. And, you know, one of the things I loved about DS9 was, you know, they had stakes where it was like, yes, the Quadrant might go away. They might be overrun by the Dominion. It might be, you know, we're going to be putting Starfleet in a different position than right. we've ever seen it in. And what does that mean for our characters? Not, well, if we don't do this, we won't exist anymore.
Sure. Sure.
Completely is that sort of thing. Or even just like the, you know, what is largely heralded as the best season finale of any Star Trek series, Best of Both Worlds. Like we're, oh shit, are we going to lose Picard? That was a big deal. And to end it on Riker, like making that decision quietly, you could see it in his, you could see the cogs turning in his eyes, and he says, fire. Like, holy shit. Like, that's the kind of thing that I kind of miss.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm missing from Discovery.
Oh yeah, it's a good point. And like the power of like character first storytelling like that, where, you know, you can have the big set piece thing happening, but what you care about is your character. That's really all that's important.
Not that Discovery isn't doing any of that.
No, for sure.
It's doing some of that. And I do like Discovery quite a bit.
I just think they've made a mistake with the ratcheting of the stakes and like always feeling like they have to go to the nth degree on every stake, but I still am enjoying what they're doing with character and what they're like building. And I guess like when you're in those situations, so like if you've got these smaller stakes you're dealing with and you put a character in the middle of it, and like Miles O'Brien has to make the decision to stay behind on DS9 and like he's got to be there to fix a freaking regulator or whatever, something I don't even understand, to make sure the ship runs smoothly, or he has to go with Keiko back to Earth. You know what I mean? Like, it's those kind of decisions where you're like, that's a really human decision.
Yeah.
And like, I can actually root for either one of them for him. You know what I mean? Like, I kind of want him to be with his family, but I also, you know, I understand why he's important to DS9. It's like that those moments don't exist on this because everything is so, no one can ever make a decision for themselves. Like any character in the show, if they ever make a decision for personal reasons, it feels like, but the galaxy, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's just one of those little nitpicks that I'm afraid that Discovery is going to keep doing this. I hope not. You know, it's like sort of like, you know, on the Flash, I was like, man, I'm ready for there not to be a speedster villain. And then they stopped doing speedster villains. I'm like, man, this show sucks now. So who knows?
Yeah, that's true. Well, that's the thing. That's the problem with this kind of storytelling. And like the fact that they've done it 4 seasons in a row, you know, it's like now if you tried to be a show that has smaller stories and smaller stakes, it's like, what are we even watching? What happened to the galaxy ending stakes? You know what I mean?
Right. Which I think we might get with Strange New Worlds.
Oh, for sure.
But I hope this time the anomaly, had a point of origin or a purpose or something that's not like, you know, a sad Talaxian or something, or one of a Kelpian who misses his family or something. Like, I get it, but to me, that was a downer for last season, where it was just like, oh, this big thing is just this, what destroyed all the dilithium is, a sad Kelpian.
Yeah.
But I don't want to go on about that too long, because I think we've adequately discussed it.
For sure. So, well, let's get back to the trailer then. What do you think of, what are any other big moments in the trailer that stood out to you?
I liked all the action. I liked all of the, I love that David Cronenberg is back, because we already had that confirmation, but it's great to see him.
Absolutely.
I want more, there's something going on with that guy. He knows too much, and I really want further, exploration of the temporal war. I'm gonna harp on this until the day I die. I want, like, they've been talking about this temporal war since Enterprise.
Right.
And kind of since Voyager, because of the temporal fleet. Like, I love time travel when it's done well. And now we have a situation where, I know there are certain Trekkies, there are a lot of Trekkies out there who don't want to talk about it and they get mad and they're like, oh, you're just a purist. I want to know why TOS looks different. I want to know if it's because of the temporal war. I want things to be tied together in a way that makes sense for me. And, I don't just like things being, now it looks different because it looks different. I it's just me. That's who I am.
Right.
And I think it could be really cool. I think it could be super cool.
I don't care at all about why things look different, but I mean, like, to a point, I should say. To a certain point, I'll get like, that's annoying. But like, to a point, I don't mind small changes. But I agree with you. I think a temporal war show, like, not necessarily this show, but I think a show based in the temporal war, I think there's a very deliberate reason they skipped over it here, because that's not the story that Discovery wanted to tell. And I'm glad they got past the old days of Star Trek. I'm glad we're past the prequel stages of Discovery and that it's in this future. It's very interesting and cool, but the temporal war would be a cool, it could be a great, like, 6-episode miniseries. It could be a great series. It could be a great movie. I don't know. It'd have to be done really well to pull it off, but it's
not possible. Just Star Trek either. I want to see the time wars on Doctor Who as well.
Right. So, and there's a reason they don't exist. It's because it's really hard to imagine what that would be like, and how you set a character in a situation where they can have, like, an experience that you can connect with easily that would be interesting to watch while also dealing with constant time travel, like constant changing of the environment around you or something like that. Like, it's crazy.
I'll say this. I think I've cracked the story to some degree for Star Trek.
All right. What you got? Or should we save it and try to pitch it to Paramount?
I want to pitch it. I don't know how to, but
surely we can figure it out.
Yeah. I mean, I think the easiest way to do it is the child of Sisko. Like, Sisko and Cassidy's kid is like sort of phasing and remembering reality wrong. And she becomes, part of the, like Section 31 or some, organization that's, running around trying to stop these things. I mean, she's got to be part Prophet, right? So, like, the Prophets live outside of space-time.
I don't know that he...
He or she.
I don't know that the child is a prophet, right? No.
Well, part prophet, because Sisko was, he was part prophet. He was half prophet.
Okay. I guess I don't remember that. His mother, like, had him from a prophet?
Yeah, I think she was
pregnant by a prophet. I don't remember that.
Well, I think she was a prophet.
Okay. Wait, really? Okay.
I believe so, yeah.
Weird. I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, like, basically, the prophets created their own emissary. They like, changed shit and, like, made her dad fall in love with her, or his dad fall in love with her, and they created Sisko.
Whether it's Sisko's child or not, I do think that the, outside of time, omnitemporal beings that are the prophets would be a great place to start, with somehow connecting back to a time war of sorts.
Well, I say Sisko's kid for several reasons. One, because it connects back to DS9 continuity, which I'm just a huge fan of. Two, they're going to have that human element, which, you know, is relatable to us, and they're dealing with things that they don't understand, that they will eventually understand and realize that they have to, you know, somewhat save the universe.
Yeah, man.
It's a good character to bring in anyway.
Yeah, I think it'd be super rad.
I think it would be a cool way to sort of see lots of different eras of Trek and see, like, the changes. Like I said, this is science fiction, but it's also, you know, Star Trek, despite what people think, has never been, like, hardcore science fact. It has always had a healthy dose of fantasy.
Sure.
And I think embracing that and saying, okay, yes, we do want to just change the sets and make this look more modern, but I think there's a really cool way of going in and exploring the differences. I mean, it's just like how we were, you know, I loved how Enterprise explained the Klingons
the thing
not
is,
having,
like,
ridges in TOS. I loved that too.
And that's a wonderful episode, but I would not make a movie that the point is to fix those problems, because you could do that with a line. You could have Cronenberg in this series say, like, yeah, the temporal wars, because of the way they've shifted things in different time periods look different depending on when you're there, depending on, like, the route you get there. So, like, some crazy whatever, timey-wimey. They basically could say, you know, spacey, timey-wimey, whatever.
Yeah, I'm not arguing they couldn't explain it away with a line. I just think that would be a really cool series. And plus, I love Quantum Leap. I think it would just be a really dope thing.
Wasn't there just a news report that they're looking at rebooting that?
Yes. Every 7 to 10 years they say that.
I agree, but here's the thing. I don't hear that as much as you do. I often mention that and you're like, yeah, they're always talking about rebooting that. But I don't follow the stuff the way you do. Like, I'm not as much on the internet as you are. And, like, so when I hear about it, a lot of times it's like it has filtered down to the plebeians, basically. I'm not reading Trek movie or whatever all the time, which I know you're not necessarily either, but, like, you do it more than I do.
It's called Google Alerts.
Right. I don't do any of that.
You just get, like, an alert and it says, hey, they're doing this again. You're like, cool, Night Court revival. Okay.
Yeah, I don't do that. I don't do that. I don't know these Google alerts of which you speak.
Right. I'm not just, like, sitting at my computer all day going, must find news, no, man.
Except for the days you're prepping news for podcasts, which is exactly what you're doing.
And I hate that. I hate it, too. I hate it.
I'm doing it for the MCU cast now, and I feel you. I don't really like it.
It is by and far my least favorite thing about doing podcasts of this nature.
Yeah. I'd much rather just sit and talk to my friends. That's the fun part. So anything else on this trailer? Cause we kind of keep jumping away. Cause I feel like
I know
there's not a ton here. They said something about blinking at one point and the, she's like, I forget what she exactly says at the beginning of the trailer. She says something about blinking.
Yeah. Like every lifespan is the heart is a heartbeat in the span of a universe's life or something like that.
A blink in the eye of a universe's life. Da, 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 da. Yeah.
Yeah. Which just reminds me of the Interstellar thing. What is it? Every hour is 7 years.
Every on rose Earth or has a thorn, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true as well.
But no, I think that that for whatever reason, they're doing some eye imagery with this anomaly. Like, they do the blink thing, and also it looks like an eye as they're going through it.
It does.
I wonder what that'll mean. I wonder if that will mean something. It feels like they're deliberately pointing us to eyes. So what does that mean? Does it mean looking? Whatever. That's interesting, and I'm interested to know what that means. Also, that anomaly looks a whole lot like the anomaly at the beginning of Lower Decks. Did you catch that? There's like a,
I did, a little bit. It does.
You know,
I don't think it's intentional. Like,
I don't either, but it'd be really funny if it was.
It is the eye. The anomaly is the eye of a sad orphan.
His tears are flooding the systems with, water, just water, like space is flooded because of the tears of a baby god.
You know, that would be really interesting. And here's where I'm going to basically create an idea that's better than what they'll do.
Man, that, you're really doing that Babe Ruth point at the bleachers shit right now. I can't wait to hear what you got.
The anomaly is the death of the final cue.
Ooh. All right.
Just go with that. Who knows?
I like it. I don't know where all the other cues have gone.
Well, you know, they were dying off in the cue in the gray back in Voyager. Like,
yeah, but they had a new baby.
And then there was that big war and shit. But, you know, new baby, you know.
I'm supposed to bring
that doesn't mean peace. Anything.
Supposed to, well,
except it's 800 it was, years from now.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
Get into trouble again.
That's a blink of an eye to the universe and a cue.
That's true.
All right. Well, I think this trailer looks good. I'm excited about Discovery Season 4, which starts like when? Like next week or something?
November 17th.
Okay.
I think.
It's my niece's birthday.
Stu Little over on Twitter said that he is ready for the super socialist Ferengi. And I think laughter is the only thing I have for it. Cause I don't know, like maybe I don't know what they're, I've never been completely sure what their society is on Star Trek. Like, you know, they say stuff like, oh, we're socialist. And then you've got like Papa Sisko, who's like, I've got a restaurant to run. I can't stand out here and talk to you about profits and shit.
Yeah. And there's a great Trexpertise. I think it's a Trexpertise. They have a great YouTube channel called Trexpertise. Mm-hmm. And, he just does like these wonderful essays where he dives real deep, and he has an entire episode. It's like really like a 40-minute long episode on the economics of Star Trek. And it kind of like breaks down what the system would be like if everything we've seen is true, what the system would have to look like. And it's really good. You should check that out if you haven't.
I will. I mean, it's really interesting because when in TOS, you have stuff like, you know, Kirk saying something to Spock about like, how dare you put yourself in danger like that? Do you know how much you're worth to Starfleet? Or how much Starfleet is spent on you or something like that? And Spock just like starts giving a really long number and he's like, okay, that's enough. So you have like instances where like apparently there is some sort of currency or monetary value. We have people talking about transporter rations. We have, you know, all sorts of like little weird capitalistic ideas. But then you have like, you know, other Trekkies who are like, no, it was a completely socialist system. And I don't know if that's true either. Like, I don't think either one is
clearly not fully. It seems based on this, whatever this Trexpertise I've seen, it's basically that the Starfleet itself, like the people within Starfleet and within the Federation don't have money. They live based on their work. They are given like, you know, like whatever, everything, their needs are fulfilled by the government,
right.
supposedly. But beyond the Federation, there are needs for money and needs for things. Yeah. So like there are ways that they can get money, you know, like Starfleet can give them certain kinds of currency and stuff. Like, it's like a whole thing. And clearly on DS9, the Starfleet officers are gambling, like they're gambling with something. Right.
They're just like replicating Latinum.
Well, that's funny. Well, I'm guessing when they're on the fringes of space or whatever, like the fringes of the Federation, particularly like Deep Space, probably Deep Space anything. There
are, it's Deep Space. Yeah.
there are probably connections with other cultures where they're going to need to spend, and those, they probably have some sort of per diem or something that they're given when they're, you know, living on a space station with other cultures.
Right. I think all of that's interesting. I would watch Star Trek C-SPAN or anything like that. Like I would just be like, I want to know.
Yeah, for sure, man.
I want to see like the Congress of Ferenginar have a discussion.
Me
about
too.
Economic policy.
Like, I want to see the Congress of Ferenginar have a discussion about economic policy. I love it.
Speaking of the Ferengi, I have seen two big complaints, and they're not complaints that I have. One, the Ferengi redesign in this trailer. Which I didn't even honestly notice at first.
I gotta be honest, I didn't even see the Ferengi. So, you're me.
But this Ferengi, you know, he's got some like, it looks like he's got like kind of pointed ears, but like they're like drooped or something. It actually looks like the old original design that that they did for the Ferengi, before they actually, you know, showed up on TNG. But, so yeah, he does look markedly different, this Ferengi captain. He's a Starfleet captain, by the way. Since you didn't see him, he does look markedly different from the TNG era Ferengi, but of course he could be mixed with another species.
Yeah.
Like for the Cardassian sure. human
Honestly,
looking woman.
Looking at him, he looks like Ferengi Klingon, right?
He looks a little Klingon, but the Ferengi always looked a little Klingon.
Yeah. He's just got some ridges on his head instead of just bumps.
And they all sharpen their teeth.
Ridge down his nose, which I guess that can be Ferengi or Klingon.
You know, we all come from the preservers. Anyway, I mean, it's true. Look, so I don't know. We don't know that he's, you know, 100% Ferengi. We're talking about 800 years in the future.
Yeah, but 800 years is just a blink in the eye of the universe.
The other big complaint I see, though, is people saying that they don't like the vibrant, ornate uniforms. And, I love them.
Yeah, I do too.
I love the new uniforms.
Yeah, I'm a fan.
I feel like, yeah, like I don't know. I guess I'm a simpleton. I'm just like,
well, I don't think it has anything to do with simple. It's evocative of the original series, and I don't think it's overly done either. I mean, they're just wearing color again, which is fine with me. In the future, not everyone has to wear like neutral colors all the time.
Right. And you know, I don't, I love the maroon colored TOS movie uniforms. There are very few uniforms I dislike. Star Trek: The Motion Picture is one of those. I hate those uniforms, except for Kirk's like admiral, like where it was like sort of that bluish gray with like the white stripe in the front. Like I dug that.
I don't know what rank it is, but I like the little skirt with the bald head.
I know you do, buddy.
What department? What department is that?
I don't know. I don't know. But you know, if you'll recall, and I don't know if you will recall, when they switched over to the First Contact uniforms in DS9, I was excited about that. I'm like, yes, those costumes are so cool. Those uniforms are awesome. So like, I'm not like, just like, ah, has no color now. No, I like them all.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I don't mind a lack of color, but I definitely don't mind a little color here and there. I don't know. I like, they've been doing very like, everyone wore the same like blue jumpsuit for a while. And it's kind of nice to see some just differences. It's nice to see the crew have different colors. I always like looking at their uniforms and getting a sense of who they are and what department they're from or whatever.
Yeah. So, you know, there are those things. And other than that, I don't know. I don't think there's anything else that I have to talk about with this trailer. It looked great though to me.
Yeah. It looks really well done for sure. I'm excited, and I don't know. I'm excited about a book being back.
Yeah.
Really, really liked him.
I feel like there's some sort of reveal that's coming about that cat.
Yeah, well, there's a shot in this trailer where it looks like he's looking off into the distance in the woods, and then it shows a child sort of half turning to look back. I don't know if that's his planet, but it looks like
I thought it was like a memory or something.
Yeah, yeah, it does look like a memory, and it looks like maybe, and then he's crying, and so it's like, yeah, there's something that they're trying to reveal with him or something. There's also a great moment where his ship is spinning through space, and it looks like he's got a cable attached behind him as if he's towing something, which is kind of fun. It looks like he's like towing something, oh, maybe through warp even. I don't know. It's crazy.
Yeah. I'm down for it, man. I'm ready for this season. And it's weird because I'm excited about this season of Discovery. I'm also very excited about Prodigy starting. So I'm sort of just like, man, I got to get through Prodigy to get to Discovery. I don't want to think about it like that because I'm excited for Prodigy.
Prodigy before Discovery?
Yeah, it's coming out later this month.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that. Goodness.
Yeah, it's basically they're going to end Lower Decks and then start Prodigy.
Wow. Okay, cool.
As far as I remember.
Cool. I dig it. All right. Well, we're going to shut this one down because we got to get to our Lower Decks episode to record it as well. So I guess that's all from us, guys. Jolan True.
Live long and prosper.
Thank you for listening to the Star Trek Universe Podcast, a Stranded Panda production. If you'd like to hear more from David C. Robertson, check out the DC On Screen podcast or maladjusted.tv for his web videos. If you'd like to hear more from Matthew Carroll, check out the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast or listen to his music. Just search for Matthew Carroll anywhere you get music.